High Rise, Part 2, by Lyle May, Opus Number 0580028. The gorilla, gunslinger, and toad took me to the nearest open cell and pushed me in. The toad rushed me, grabbed two fistfuls of mustard-yellow jumpsuit, slammed me against the wall hard enough to bounce my head from it, and backhanded me. He let go and whipped out his baton in a practiced move, jamming it across my throat, pressing hard as I flailed my arms at him. The fat prison guard leaned in close enough that his bloodshot blue-gray eyes were inches from mine. "I hate punks like you." I couldn't breathe. Panic squeezed my chest. "Did you like it? Was it fun?" His breath licked my face. "I'll show you fun." The toad jammed his baton harder. I choked and gagged and weakly pushed at his arms. The gunslinger saw this and fired his baton into my ribs once, twice, thrice. Each impact buckled my knees. I needed air, but right then oxygen was as far away as help or empathy. Still I pushed against the toad, his club the only thing holding me up against the wall. A fourth blow from the gunslinger's baton and my bladder let loose from my consciousness. The toad kicked me awake moments later, laughing as I sobbed in air. Tears, snot, and blood came with each broken gasp. The air was not sweet like some people claim it is after being without it for a while. It tasted of recycled fear, dominance, and the degradation ran down the throats of young prisoners at High Rise. I knew in that air I was utterly alone. Pulling the Mountain Dew bottle from his back pocket, the toad unscrewed the cap and pursed his lips. But when he saw me watching from the floor, he put the cap back on and spat brown saliva inches from my face. "If we hear a peep out of you, we'll come back and string you up. Ain't nobody gonna question it or care about you dying, boy." In a falsetto, he croaked, "I swear, detective, we offered to get the boy help, and he refused. I thought he might be suicidal, but when we let him out for showers, there he hanged." Blue-gray eyes bored into mine. "You understand me, boy? We straight?" I nodded because it was all I could do beyond breathe and calm my hammering heart. They left then, slamming the door behind them. I don't know how long I sat on the floor hugging my knees. My worldly possessions, four letters, a toothbrush, and a tube of toothpaste, a pad of paper, and a small pencil, lay strewn about. Boot prints marred the envelopes like canceled postage. The people who wrote those letters couldn't help me. Staring up at the bare light bulb, I thought of breaking the glass and using a piece to cut my throat. What if they came back? More time passed. I sat petrified, wishing myself far away from the High Rise, wishing I never traveled to North Carolina, wishing I had a weapon to defend myself against the next person to come through that door. Later, after a thorough search of the cell, I found one of the long metal slats on the bunk was loose. It was thick, heavy, and cold. I pulled it up and knew it would be easy to break, then quickly pushed it back when the metal squealed. Listening for footsteps and hearing none of after a long moment, I climbed in bed, pulled the covers up to my chin despite the sticky August heat, and stared at the ceiling until the light went out. There were two choices, the light bulb or the metal slat, me or them. I could hit the first one through the door. The others might get me, but I'd make certain the toad didn't. Despite my burgeoning hatred for their authority, I was drawn more toward cutting my throat. It would be so much easier to walk away from it all, save everybody a lot of trouble. I could escape this wretched place and move on to whatever came next. For the rest of the night and well into the days that followed, my thoughts flipped between the light bulb and the metal slat. It's the only two objects in my tiny 7x9 world that gave me power. Power over the fear, isolation, helplessness, and despair. The only comfort I had. It was enough. Finally, I slept. Compared to the U Center's ICU and the High Rise, death row has been an endless sorrow and hurt that refused to heal. 30 days in the hole and a beating by hillbillies in uniform may have seemed like hell, but they were little more than stumbles at the entrance of an abyss. There were finite experiences over as quickly as they occurred. As of this moment in time, I've stressed through 33 executions. All of them were men I knew of. Many were friends, and a few I considered brothers. In the states where capital punishment is active, I know those death row prisoners would give anything to be somewhere else. I understand. Each time a sheet-draped corpse is wheeled away in the lightless hours of the morning, out of public sight and conscious, I know how a dog about to be euthanized feels, clawing at the door of his cage and whining, "Get me away from here, please, God, please." There have been no executions in North Carolina since 2006, turning our hell into a limbo while various legal issues are haggled over by attorneys and prosecutors. Texas, Ohio, Florida, Georgia, Arizona, Oklahoma, and several other states have picked up the slack in the noose, but here it remains empty to taunt us all. Maybe there are harder situations, tougher choices, and more fearsome circumstances than I have ever experienced. Maybe, if I end up in the death chamber, I'll be forced to choose between the light bulb and the metal slat a final time.